talk some Timbers. They're in the finals of this terrific MLS is back tournament. Tomorrow they'll take on Philadelphia for a spot in the finals. Our guest is the proverbial returning champion. Many of you recall his fine work when he was at KEZI Sports. On Twitter, use the handle at Jake Zivin. Jake, it's been a while. Crazy times. How are you and yours doing?
Yeah, good, Steve. Good to talk to you. Always good to talk to you and all the folks down in Eugene. Good, man. I mean, as good as you can be, right? As you mentioned, it's a crazy time. And my wife and I, we've survived so far. We've stayed healthy. We've stayed safe. You know, that's goal number one for us and for everybody. And now that sports are starting to come back, it's been great to have stuff to watch on TV and personally to get back to work in kind of a real sense of calling games with the Timbers of this MLS's back tournament has been enjoyable, has been refreshing after 4 months off, and they're playing well and they're in the semifinals, as you mentioned. So at least one more game to call in this tournament, maybe another, depending on how things go tomorrow night. But it has been really nice to be back at it.
So I got to do the timeline. When did you leave Eugene? And at first, it wasn't a full-time gig with the Timbers. How long have you been the voice of the Timbers? Fill me in there.
Yeah, so the timeline is, time flies. Because when I'm like throwing out these numbers in my head, it doesn't feel like that long ago. But January of 2015... was when I moved up to Portland. The year before, 2014, I was the radio voice of the Timbers while I was still the sports director at KEZI. So I drive up to call games, come back down, you know, the day job, so to speak, with KEZI. And then I came up full-time with the Timbers for the 2015 season. So like my last day of work, literally, I think second to last day of work, literally at KEZI, was covering the Oregon Ohio State National Championship game down in Dallas. I was supposed to start with the Timbers like mid January, and I pushed it back a couple weeks because the Ducks made it to the national title game. If they had lost in the semis, I would have started earlier. So it's easy to remember that timeline, and man, a great 5 years almost in Eugene, and now it's been 5+ years in Portland.
Crazy. Let's hit rewind. So the regular season started February 22nd against New England. Then the Timbs played Minnesota, Nashville, and stop. What do you remember about that time? You know, I'm sure you were following college hoops, then Rudy Gobert, and all of a sudden, there you are. You got to go into lockdown. You must have been like, this is insane.
Yeah, I mean, so we were... I remember very well. So we do a weekly radio show up here in Portland called Talk Timbers, and it's every Wednesday night. And we were in the radio station in the studio, about to go on the air, maybe just on the air from 6 to 8, and seeing on Twitter that something's going on with Oklahoma City, Utah, Oklahoma City, in Oklahoma City. You know, the players were on the court, everybody left the court, they're evacuating the building basically, and obviously given the situation with COVID at the time, you know, everybody figured that's what was happening. As our show's going on, the NBA cancels the season, right, in the middle of the show. I mean, it all happened within an hour or so.
Wow.
And we're sitting there, and we're talking about a game. The Timbers were supposed to be going to New England to play at New England on that Saturday, that Sunday. I think it was going to be a Sunday morning game. And we finished the show, we're talking about it, and we're in breaks, and we're like, I don't think this game's going to happen. You know, if the NBA just shut down their season like that within an hour, everything is going to go on pause. We had that feeling. And I was actually getting ready. I was going to be in Minnesota that weekend to call a game for Fox Sports 1, one of the few games that I was going to do for Fox this year. And you know, had to wait a couple days wondering, hey, do I get on the plane? Do I not? I think it was the morning I was going to fly out, or maybe the morning before I was going to fly out. When MLS officially suspended things, and you know, kind of not knowing, do I go to the airport? Do I not go to the airport? It was a wild time, right? And you know, a lot of us in sports have those same stories from that week. You know, we didn't know how long it was going to be, right? Obviously, at the time, it felt like it was going to be a long time, and it was. And you know, knock on wood, the return to play for MLS at least has been successful in the sense that it's been safe. And it's been smooth down there in Florida after a couple hiccups to start.
Yeah, we're talking with Timbers play-by-play man Jake Zivin. So, you know, as last month was rolling around, this idea to get back to business with a tournament. So, you know, for those of you who are around the team, coaches, players, media, staff, as opposed to just picking up the schedule at where it left off and finishing the regular season, how widely accepted, how did people like this whole MLS's back tournament concept when it was first presented?
I think it was just kind of like, well, let's see if this works. People didn't know if it would work, and there was a lot of skepticism that the bubble wouldn't work. You know, can the bubble hold? Obviously, the good thing about a bubble is if you can keep cases out, it's a really safe environment, and they've proven that. And NWSL, who started about a week before MLS, they had their bubble in Utah that already finished. They proved it, that they could do it as well. But before, you know, people didn't know, hey, if a case gets into the bubble, will it spread quicker? Will it all have to shut down? There were rumblings for a couple months, honestly, before it actually happened, that this is the way they were going to go to return to play. You have reactions all over the board, right? I mean, obviously people are nervous. They want to know what the safety protocols are, and this was collectively bargained between the players, right? I mean, it wasn't just MLS saying we're going to do this.
Right.
It was MLS and the MLS Players Association coming together. The players, you know, agreed that with everything, eventually they came to an agreement. Hey, that there were some contentious moments that played out pretty publicly, but, you know, that we're going to do it. And, you know, it turns out, that again, it works. I mean, we have three games left, two semifinals and a final. We've got a week left in this thing. The final is next Tuesday, and it's been a success from that standpoint.
You know, the opener against the Galaxy on July 13th ended up a 2-1 win. I mean, you guys had not called a game or seen a game in four months and 5 days. You know, all the scoring was the 59th minute on, but just watching that game, calling that game, just to see the guys back on the pitch, they finished with 10 men. I'll tell you what, that seemed like a pretty intense, exciting return to play, no?
Oh man, it was, and so the LA Galaxy have one of the biggest players in MLS, Chicharito, who is the all-time leading goal scorer for Mexico, and he was a big signing for the Galaxy to replace Zlatan Ibrahimovic this offseason. And he hadn't scored yet in the first two games of the season back in March, but this is the first game of the MLS back tournament. There's a lot of eyes on Chicharito, everything he does. And he had a penalty kick in the first 13 minutes of the game. I think it was the 13th minute. And the Timbers goalkeeper, Steve Clark, saved it. And so it was this big moment just kind of 15 minutes into the return. And that kind of gets you going, right? And that kind of, all right, we're back. You know, let's go. Just in the sense that we've got an exciting moment to call that is relevant. They'll be seeing this in Europe, to be honest, because Chicharito, I mean, he was a big star for Manchester United and Real Madrid. So it was fun, yeah. And then as the game goes on, it's really good. It was a really good result for the Timbers, a really good win for them. And we didn't know; nobody knew what any team was going to look like after 4 months, to be honest. And the group the Timbers were in was a really difficult one with the LA Galaxy, LAFC, and the Houston Dynamo. And people were calling it the Group of Death, which is kind of a name that is given to any kind of soccer tournament with a group. They'll pick the hardest group and call it the Group of Death. So everybody's calling this group the Group of Death. For the Timbers to come out and get a win right away in the Group of Death, so to speak, it's like, all right, yeah, no, they've got it. They've returned well, and we've seen them continue to play really well throughout the tournament.
Talking with Jake Zivin, play-by-play man for the Portland Timbers. And we've got to deviate here. Of course, you're a Chicago guy from Evanston. If I didn't bring up The Last Dance, which kind of seemed like he carried all us sports nuts through the early pandemic days. So the timeline, let's say from the last loss to the Pistons in 90 to Michael hitting the jumper over Byron Russell in 98, your personal timeline, where was Jake? Did you to see the dynasty in person? And I would imagine you were pretty engulfed as a Bulls fan.
Totally. So what I will say, what I don't remember other than through, so I used to have like the VHS video yearbooks, you know, of like the championship seasons. You know, they'd produce those. They'd produce those like years in review for every championship. I had all of them. And so I was born in 85. So
okay.
I was 5 when they won their first title. And I remember it for sure. And I remember the Blazers series. I really remember the Phoenix Suns series. I remember where I was when John Paxson, who was my favorite player, made that three. I still have his jersey, which still fits me somehow. It's still too big for me. You know, back in the 90s, everybody wore stuff so baggy. A jersey from when I was like 8 years old is too big for me now. But I don't quite remember like the Pistons, right? And needing to overcome that.
Okay.
Other than from watching these VHSs. And the one for the first championship was called Learning to Fly. And I thought, and they kept playing the Tom Petty song, Learning to Fly. And until I was in college, I thought that that was a song made specifically like for that video. I had no idea it was Tom Petty, no idea it was like a really popular song.
Awesome.
Until I got to college and heard somebody playing it. But that kind of video, that VHS of their first championship, really did a good job of explaining kind of what they had to overcome with the Pistons, and the Bad Boy Pistons. So I knew of that, but I didn't really feel the losses because I was too young. And then when they started to win, you know, certainly did. And the second three, for sure. I mean, I was, you know, a teenager coming into my teenage years at that point. So those ones I remember so well, and it was a great time. To be, you know, I was also a Cubs and a Bulls and a Bears fan growing up, so I didn't have many moments on either of those teams. So the Bulls gave me all of my enjoyment as a young sports fan.
Yeah, I would imagine as a 9-month-old or whatever, you weren't too big on Bears 46,
no.
Patriots
yeah,
10.
Six months old. No, but I mean, same thing. Like the video yearbook, right? The VHS. Man, we would just pop it in, and the Super Bowl Shuffle. We had the video of that as well. We just pop it in and watch it.
That's awesome. Final couple thoughts for Jake Zibben. So that match before the last one against FC Cincinnati, another nail-biter. They were up one, allowed the equalizer. You mentioned Steve Clark earlier. That was kind of a miscue. It was, what was his name, Jurgen Lacadia capitalizes, then misses an open net, and then in the shootout, Portland doesn't miss. But again, man, the level of drama to make it past that into the quarters was kind of off the charts.
Yeah, it was. That was an interesting game. Cincinnati, they're in their second year, and they were terrible last year.
Right.
They allowed the most goals of any team in MLS history in a season. And they kind of came into this tournament being like, we're just going to be really defensive. We're going to try to lock things down. We're going to we're going to put all 11 guys within 35 yards of the goal and make teams score on us, basically. It's kind of like the equivalent of like Wisconsin in college basketball, right? Where like you're just slowing down the game, you're grinding it out and just kind of reducing the scoring opportunities for the Timbers, at least, or making it really difficult. The game goes on, like it's not a very entertaining game because of that. We knew it was going to be the case. Then the Timbers finally break through. They get their goal. And you're like, okay, once the team scores a goal, and then the game changes because Cincinnati, now they need to come out. They need to try to score. So they need to get a little bit further away from their goal. And that should theoretically open things up for the Timbers to get another goal. But, you know, Cincinnati, credit to them. Like, they were a lot better after they got scored on. It was a mistake from Steve Clark, 100%, you know, and he'll admit it. He'll say it. And you know, that allowed Cincinnati to equalize. And one thing that's different in this tournament, if you're used to, you know, if you're a soccer fan or used to watching soccer matches, in most tournaments, if the game is tied after 90 minutes, it goes to a 30-minute extra time period and then penalty kicks. They're not doing a 30-minute extra time period. They're just going straight to penalty kicks. So it was like, boom, all right, here we go. Let's go to penalty kicks. And the Timbers were great in penalty kicks. You know, it seems like it's kind of a random thing, right? Like, it's kind of luck to win a penalty shootout. But I think there's something to teams with experienced players who are able to kind of step up in that moment. And the Timbers have it. And they were perfect, as you mentioned, in penalties. They made all four of theirs. Cincinnati had one saved by Steve Clark on the player, Lacadia,
right,
made the penalty to send it to extra time. So he redeemed himself. another Cincinnati player hit the ball over the bar, just, you know, out of the stadium onto another field out there in Orlando. And the Timbers won the penalty shootout. So I think it showed just that they have a lot of experience on their team, and they're not afraid in big moments like that. They don't get nervous. And they're the most experienced team left at this thing as well. I think that can help them in the Final Four.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up in closing because I was reading a preview. They're playing Philadelphia Union, who've only allowed 3 goals, and they were talking about Portland's age, Portland's experience against a really young, athletic Philadelphia squad. So, Jake, what's the buzz about how the Timbers match up with this Union team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good, really good way of kind of putting this matchup. Philadelphia is really good. They're an up-and-coming team in MLS. Historically, they've been in the league for 10 years. They came in 1 year before the Timbers, and they haven't had a ton of success. They've only won 1 playoff game in 10 years. The Timbers have won 9. They've won an MLS Cup. They've been to another MLS Cup. So they, in a similar time frame, have had a lot more success as a club. But Philadelphia has a youth movement. They've invested a lot of money in their academy, which is developing young players and then signing those players. And they're getting really good production out of those players now on the first team. They've got a young, a 19-year-old named Brendan Aaronson, who a lot of people think could really be a really good player, not just for Philadelphia, but for the U.S. national team going forward. Most people expect him to be playing in Europe within a year or two, if not sooner. And he's been really good for them this tournament. The Timbers, meanwhile, have a guy like Diego Valeri, who's a former MLS MVP. Sebastian Blanco, he's 32, but he's been the best player, I think, at this tournament, any team. And they've been there. They've been in these knockout situations, and they've had success. I think that's going to help. You look at the other side of the bracket, the other two teams in the semifinals, Orlando and Minnesota, have 0 combined MLS playoff wins between them, those two. So the 3 other teams in the Final Four have 1 playoff win in 18 combined seasons. The Timbers have 9 playoff wins in their 9 seasons. There's a huge difference between what these clubs have done success-wise in MLS. That said, you know, this is a new year. This is a weird situation. But as it comes to, like, playing in pressure games, knockout games, and kind of a playoff-type environment, the Timbers have by far the most experience of any club left. I think that'll help them. But again, you know, it's such a unique situation, you never know.
Well, we'll see if that postseason savvy proves to be the edge they need. Folks, he is Jake Zivin, play-by-play for the Portland Timbers. Tomorrow, 5 o'clock our time against Philadelphia for a spot in the finals. On Twitter, it's @ Jake Zivin. Hey, Jake, great catching up. Always appreciate your insight and solid information. I'm glad you and yours are doing well. Enjoy, hopefully, the next 2 matches, and obviously look forward to catching up again down the road.
Oh, man, of course. Steve, great to talk to you. Hope you and yours are doing well, and everybody down in Eugene is doing well. And, yeah, let's talk soon.
All right, have a good one, Jake. All right, there you go, Jake Zivin.